Good morning. We're going to continue our class on studies in Bible authority using the question that Jesus asked in Matthew 21. From heaven or from men? Because really that's what this boils down to, is what we teach, what we practice individually and collectively really only has two possible sources of authority. And that is, either it came from God or it came from men. And last week, we looked at the foundation of authority, where it all starts. And I want to finish up with one thought that we introduced at the end of class last time before getting into this morning's lesson. The last thing that I mentioned was this, about the importance of that foundation, of knowing or having the authority, knowing that what we're doing is pleasing to God. And may I also say this, that these first few classes are the foundation for then taking a look at specific issues, specific circumstances where there would be potential disagreements for what we can teach or what we can practice, again, either individually or collectively. And this touches on that. Without a sure foundation, we might know the what, but we won't know the why. I've used the illustration before. You've heard it before about the young mother who was making a ham for Easter, and her daughter was watching and cut off the ends of the ham before putting it in the baking pan and sticking it in the oven. And the young daughter asked, "Why'd you cut off the ends of the ham?" And what was her reply? Do you remember how the story goes? "I don't know. But I did it. I do it because my mom did it." And so they take it to the grandmother to the mom's mom and ask her, "I don't know." And they finally go back to where they find the source of why that was done. And what was it? The pan was too small. So even though the pan now, in this particular circumstance, it fit just fine, they knew the what, but they didn't know the why. Well, if they'd known the why, they wouldn't have done the what in this particular case. Okay, well, that same thing holds true to what we teach and practice spiritually. We've got to know the why behind it. And if we cannot produce a why that is founded in Scripture, then at that point, it becomes easy to fight over various opinions, because that's all it's reduced to at that point. It's just opinions. Traditions that we hold to are simply that. They're man-made traditions. And if we may be, we may find ourselves teaching as commandments of God the doctrine of men. And so we've got to be very careful about this foundation and why we're talking about this. This is why it's so important to understand and to have, as we sometimes say, book, chapter, and verse for what we're doing, for what we're teaching, for what we're practicing. Okay, so I just wanted to emphasize that before moving on to today's lesson, and that is the need for authority. This is a very basic, simple lesson that we'll be talking about some truths that we all understand when it comes to our normal, everyday life, and I think that everybody, for the most part, understands these things, even those who are not religious. But then when it comes to religion, when it comes to obeying God, following what He says and what the Bible says, all of a sudden, these principles get thrown out the window. And I don't understand it. Okay, so let's first of all talk about the need for authority in various areas of our life. Okay, first of all, we understand that we need a type of government. And we need to have a government with officials who are in charge, who have authority. Why is that? Why do most people, at least, understand this basic need in our life, that we need to have a government who has authority?
Without it, our nation would live in chaos, even more so than it already does.
Yeah. It's already pretty bad with the authorities that we've got, but it's better than without. It would be utter chaos. In fact, when you take a look at situations such as what has happened in the last couple of years in certain cities with protests and whatnot, terrorism is really what it is. When you look at Ferguson, Missouri, Charlotte, North Carolina, where the authority is completely disregarded, the governmental authority is completely disregarded, and frankly, the governmental authorities can't do anything about it for a while because it's such a dangerous situation and hard to control. I mean, look at what happened. You've got looting and burning and terrorizing of people and destruction of property, and it's just complete and utter chaos. It's anarchy. And people may say that they want anarchy, but if they really truly had anarchy, they would find out very quickly that they don't want that. Everybody understands that they need some authority. And in Judges 17:6 and 21:25, it says there was no king in those days. Everyone did what? What was right in his own eyes. Now, ultimately, I believe that's a spiritual statement, and we're talking about just strictly secular here, but the same thing holds true, does it not? If there is no king, there is no governmental authority, and everybody's just doing what's right in their own eyes, then you're plunging into chaos. Dave?
It really starts with what seems like a basic need for space. We hear people complain, you're invading my space. You're getting in my space. We tend to think that we need space around us, and then in that space we tend to put possessions. And when you start managing space or property and possessions, you better have some type of governance. And that seems to be at the root of everything. It's very difficult to imagine the need for government if we all weren't concerned about our space. We had plenty of it. Everybody could go find their own area, their own territory. Nobody tended to cross.
If there was no greed or anything. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Songwriters have sung about, that type of utopia for years. And
sure.
Years, but we are imperfect. And therefore, we found out really early on that we needed governance.
Yeah. And what does God say about the purpose of government in Romans 13? That the government does not bear the sword in vain. It's there to punish the evildoer. It's there to try to keep the control and to be the good for all people, which would speak to some of those things you're talking about. And without that, it's every man for himself. And unfortunately, because of the imperfect people, because people are greedy, because people don't have the care and concern for their fellow neighbor, you tend to go to decay.
I find the period of the Judges fascinating because there was not really any kind of government. Mm-hmm. You don't, other than the priests and the spiritual side of their practice of religion, they seem to have a huge, huge amount of freedom. Mm-hmm.
By the people, for the people. Yeah. Too bad it's not still that way. But we understand the basic need for authority in society, do we not, with our government? And you can bring this down to on the job. What happens if there is no hierarchy of authority in the workplace? Nothing's going to get done. You know the old saying about when the cat is away, the mice will play? Well, that people talk about that in the workplace all the time, and they see freedom, and they don't. Now, you're going to have your few industrious people who will still work, and ultimately, what they would end up doing is trying to become the authority to try to bring some order to the chaos and to make sure things get done. I mean, it's going to default to that. But on the job, with no boss, someone to organize and delegate responsibilities, there would be no order of organization, there would be no effective work getting done. Such a business would not last at all. It would not survive. In the home, those of you who are maybe 60, 70 and above, y'all remember the days in this society where it was standard, regardless of whom you were, that the husband was the head of the house, and he, maybe not necessarily always in the best way, ruled the house, but there was that understanding that the husband was the authority, that the wife was submissive to the husband, and children were raised to respect authority. For those of you who are maybe 50, 40 and below, is that the way our peers have raised our children? For the most part. When you see the downfall of society, you can go to this right here. If you don't have authority in the home, if you don't have children who are taught the need to respect the authority of the home and of the father and the mother, then you have all kinds of chaos once again. And when the husband, the headship of man, is being rejected by feminist ideology, then we have a tendency towards this decay. And that's not to say a man is to be a tyrant. It's not to say the man is to lord it over his wife or his children, but God has given that responsibility of headship to the husband. That's a God-given thing. And so we used to be able to say that everybody understood this. That's not the case anymore. But I think those of us in this room, we understand the need for authority in the home. Well, if people on the job with no type of organization or supervisor to organize things meant that the business isn't going to last long and that no work would get done, what do you think would happen in school if there was no principals, no teachers? Would there be a school? School, yeah, as Alice Cooper sang, school's out forever. School's out for summer, school's out forever. Yeah, it would not be a very good situation. And then we can bring this down to the church. Just as there needs to be authority in other areas of life, so there must be authority in the body of Christ. Colossians 1:18 says that Christ is the head of the church. That means he is in that position of authority. And just as we understand that in every other area of our life, we need authority, that we need to have that organization, and that somebody is either has inherent authority or delegated authority to then tell others what needs to be done or the way things are going to go, that's the way it is with Christ and the church as well. And Jesus is the head. He has the say-so. And while there is no organization on a universal scale, how does that filter down as far as authority in the local churches? What is God's design there? Within the local church, you have the elders, the shepherds, who are to be the spiritual leaders, who have authority over the flock that they have been given. And so we need it in the church as well. So that's what we're talking about here, is the need for authority in the church, in our own individual Christian lives. And I would suggest to you that there are at least three reasons why authority is absolutely critical and necessary for in religious matters. Number one, the nature of God demands it. Like I said last week, when you start the Bible with Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, that settles it right there. God created, not me. And as the psalmist said in is it Psalm 8? I've forgotten which psalm it is now, but that we have not made ourselves. It's God that has made us, not we ourselves. We are the sheep of His pasture. Who are we to say to God, you can't tell me what to do? And of course, yeah, we still do that, but the nature of God demands authority. He is, as the sovereign creator, He has this inherent right. He is a God who by nature possesses authority. And then I would suggest to you that a standard of right and wrong is essential to us. One of the arguments one of the stronger arguments that I believe can be made against atheism and against evolution is the fact that most people understand that there is some inherent sense of right and wrong. Even if we were not part of a church, most people would agree that if I was to start having an affair with one of the ladies here, with some other woman, that would be wrong. Oh, now people like to talk about it and people still do it, but still at a basic level, people understand that's wrong. You don't mess around with another man's wife and you don't take the money. Those two things right there. What were you talking about? Space. Yeah, you put wife and possessions in that.
Property.
That's right.
Your things.
Yeah.
Your dominion. What you think you have dominion over.
When Penn and Jonathan, you know where I'm going with this, don't you, Lisa? When Penn and Jonathan were babies, toddlers, Jonathan has always been a follower, always wanted whatever Penn had. We thought, in our wise years of young parents, we were convinced that if when we got something for the kids, for the boys, that we wouldn't just get one, we would get two. That way each of them could have the same thing, right? Guess how well that worked out. Penn could have something in his hand, some toy. Jonathan could have the exact same thing in his hand. Guess which one he wanted? The one that his brother had, the one that Penn had. And he would try to take that from Penn. Well, what do you think Penn's response was? Did he like it? No, that was his. You don't take my stuff. We still have trouble with this today. But you don't take my stuff. We understand that that's just not right. There is a sense of right and wrong that is built into us that I believe goes back to Genesis 1, 27, 28 about being made in the image of God. We're like God. There is a sense of right and wrong. And if there is no true right and wrong, then nobody can say Adolf Hitler was wrong in what he did. That the Nazis were wrong. You cannot make any justification for condemning Adolf Hitler if there is no right and wrong. It's all relative. It's all subjective. Well, need for authority rests, number one, in the fact that God, inherent in who He is, demands authority. But without a standard of right and wrong, no one can know the difference. No one can know what's good and what's bad. You've got to have a standard. And that's where the Bible comes in, of course. Truth and error must be distinguished so that people can know and discern right from wrong. 2 plus 2 in math is always going to be 4. It doesn't matter how much you want it to be 5. It's always going to be 4. There is a standard. There is a truth that is consistent. The Constitution of the United States. What was, without us getting into a big political discussion, it's not the point of this, what was the ideas of our founding fathers for the Constitution and how long that was to be in effect? Was it a temporary thing? It was a permanent document, right?
It has provisions to be altered, but basically the basics of the Constitution is permanent. Otherwise, it's worthless.
Yeah. If it is flexible to the point to where you can change it so much to where what you're left with is not even recognizable from the original, then you don't have the same country that you had at the beginning. Now, maybe that the people of this country want to go that direction. I personally don't, but it may be that that's where this country ends up going. But the Constitution was designed to be a permanent fixture, to be a standard, okay? And to delineate, you know, what's right and what's wrong for the government. Well, we need a standard of right and wrong in our lives, and that's because the nature of mankind requires authority. Look over at Jeremiah 10 and verse 23, please. Jeremiah 10 and verse 23. Jeremiah recognized that the authority for spiritual matters cannot rest with man because of the nature of mankind. And that is that we tend to go away from that which is right. Jeremiah 10:23. O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. If left to ourselves, if we're not relying upon the authority of God, but we're looking upon our own source of authority or in our own life and what we think, Jeremiah says it doesn't work out that way. And then over in Proverbs 14 and in verse 12, Solomon says, Proverbs 14, verse 12, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. The nature of mankind leads us in our own paths down a path that leads to destruction. Psalm 119, verse 105, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. That authority, that sense of direction, of knowing what's right and what's wrong and what we need to live by, the standards that we need to live by, that doesn't come from within ourselves. It comes from without ourselves. It is objective, not subjective. It is a standard that comes from God. We recognize the need for authority in every other facet of life. We must recognize it in our spiritual life as well. Because it affects who we are, what we do, what we say, what we teach, what we practice, etc. Okay, questions, comments about any of this? Ann? Anne spoke of a situation where she saw in the store a young girl with her mother, and the mother was on the phone the entire time, texting or whatever, for 15 minutes and never once paying attention to her daughter, even as her daughter several times was trying to get her attention and show her some things. And Anne's point is that's abdicating authority, and it is. When you do that, when you neglect your child like that, that child is going to grow up to learn not to respect you as a parent, not to listen to you, because you have shown them that they're not important. Well, they're going to turn around and say, well, you're not important. That's the way it works.
Nature abhors a factor. Something will rush in there and take care of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be the wrong thing.
That's right. Somebody else will step in and take the place and lead them down
the
wrong path. That's right. Good point. So authority, absolutely crucial, and it being a good authority, crucial as well. Steve? Yeah. That's right. Steve says that we were created by a perfect being, but we are not perfect. And we can strive for perfection, of course. And it's because of that very point that God is perfect and we are not perfect that shows us that the nature of God demands authority, you know, and our respect for His authority and our nature, the nature of mankind, just goes to show that we need His authority because we're not perfect beings. Sure, sure. We were made to be like that. But we, through our own free will, have chosen not to be. Okay? So let's talk about some illustrations from the Old Testament of how authority is absolutely needed. Turn with me to these passages, if you will, as we look at these examples. We're going to blow through these fairly quickly, but just make some basic points from each one of these. Let's start with Adam and Eve, Genesis chapter 3. Everybody knows the story of Adam and Eve. And what was the one piece of God's authority that they did not submit to? They ate of the fruit of the tree of which they were told not to eat. Remember, Satan said, "Did God really say this to you?" And, tempted Eve, and they did not respect God's authority on that. What happened? Sin was introduced to the world. Long line of consequences as a result. Okay, what happened to them specifically? Cast out of the garden. What else? Severed the relationship with God. Okay, it produced that gap, that breach because of sin. What else? Hardship. Yeah, hardship, the curses. Now, granted, that affected everybody, but it first affected them. The curses upon both man and woman came about as a result of this. There was consequences for not respecting God's authority. He said, "You can do this, but you don't do this." And they did what he said not to do. Okay, pretty basic, pretty simple. I think we all understand that. And most people, even in the religious world, would understand that. Okay, but this, again, this is just setting the stage for some other specific scenarios that we'll be looking at later on in this class. Cain and Abel. We're not given all the details in Genesis 4 of what the instructions were to Cain and Abel. But when you compare Genesis 4 along with, or couple it with Hebrews 11 and about the sacrifice of Abel being by faith, and you take a look at what happened there, Cain obviously did not respect the authority of God. That's what it boils down to. And he didn't offer a sacrifice in the way that pleased God, whatever that may include. What happened to him? Or what happened? What was God's response to his sacrifice should be the question. It was rejected. Okay? He was not pleased with that. Okay, Nadab and Abihu, Leviticus 10. I want you to turn there for sure because I want to point out some specific phrases. Leviticus 10. Actually, in Leviticus 9, I'm not going to take the time to point this out right now, but you can look back on your own time, that many times, several times in Leviticus 9, as they're going through the ceremony of consecrating Aaron and his sons, the phrase is said that they did such and such according to the command of the Lord, or according to the command of Moses, or in the prescribed manner, or something of that nature. Several times they did everything exactly as they were to do. There's a big contrast when you get to Leviticus 10. Oh, and by the way, at the end of Leviticus 9, the offerings were accepted by God, and that was represented by God sending fire down from heaven to consume the offering, showing his acceptance. In Leviticus 10, you have Nadab and Abihu, who are the sons of Aaron, as priests, who offer this incense with fire that was not authorized. They didn't follow the instructions. And so, fire came down from heaven again, but this time, instead of consuming an offering, it consumed Nadab and Abihu, showing his displeasure. And it says in verse 1, they offered profane fire. It's the way the New King James translates it, unauthorized fire. It would be the way another translation would say it. They offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. In chapter 9, over and over again, it's as they had been commanded. Chapter 10, verse 1 is, which he had not commanded them. And then Moses spoke to Aaron in verse 3, "This is what the Lord spoke, saying, 'By those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy, and before all the people, I must be glorified.'" What is God's point there? His point is that when you do not respect my authority, you do not treat me as holy, you do not glorify me. That's why God responded the way he did. So it's not just a matter of, well, he said, "Do it this way," and you did it a little bit differently. Ultimately, what that says is you don't respect God and his authority. It's dishonorable to God. Korah's rebellion in Numbers 16 is another example of in the Old Testament, where Korah questioned God's authority and presumed that he and others could also serve as priests, even though they were not told they could. They were upset that Aaron's household and that Moses was a leader, and so they rebelled against God's appointed leader and incurred the wrath of God. And he and all his family and all those followers were swallowed up by the earth as a result of God's judgment. David and the Ark of the Covenant. Turn to 1 Chronicles, please, chapter 15. 1 Chronicles 15. Again, this is a story that probably most of you are familiar with, where David is bringing the Ark to Jerusalem. And what's the manner in which he brings the Ark? What does he use? Okay, he uses a cart instead of what? Instead of the priest carrying it on the poles, carrying it on the shoulders. Okay, they set it on a cart and they were just driving, and it was being pulled by oxen. Okay, and as they went along, you remember the oxen stumbled. Uzzah was there next to the ark, and good intentions, he reached out to steady the ark so it wouldn't fall over and be damaged. Seems innocuous, but what was the rule about touching the ark? Nobody, not even the priest. It's used for the poles. Okay, and so God struck him dead. At first, David didn't understand. He was angry. But when you look at 1 Chronicles 15, as they finally get ready to move it again, notice what he says in verse 12. 1 Chronicles 15, verse 12. He said to them, speaking of the Levites and the priests, "You are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites. Sanctify yourselves, you and your brethren, that you may bring up the ark of the Lord God of Israel to the place I have prepared for it." Notice this. "For because you did not do it the first time, the Lord our God broke out against us because we did not consult him about the proper order." You think God takes seriously his commands and the way he wants things done? Ask Uzzah. Ask David. And David recognized, ultimately, we didn't see what the instructions were. We didn't consult God about the way we were supposed to do it. Well, it's important that you have authority for what you're doing. Uzziah was king of Judah in 2 Chronicles 26, and he entered into the temple to do what? To offer incense on the incense altar. What was the problem with that? He wasn't a priest. He wasn't authorized to do so. And in fact, the high priest came in with many other priests and said to Uzziah, "It is not for you, Uzziah, to do this. You get out of here." And Uzziah was angry. He refused to do so, and what happened to him as a result? God struck him with leprosy, and he remained a leper the rest of his life. Okay, the reason why we're looking at all these examples, and we're just, this is just a small sample of examples we can look at of people who did not respect God's authority. The reason I want to stress this is because you see the way God feels about those who do not follow his authority. God's nature demands that we respect his authority. Our nature demands that we respect his authority. That sense of right and wrong is only found in God. And so the need for authority is there in every area of our life. It's there for us in religious matters as well. These are just a sampling of examples from the Old Testament that illustrate this point. Questions, comments? Let me close with Matthew 7, verses 21 through 23, really quickly. Dan, can you give me 30 seconds, please? Matthew 7, please, verses 21 through 23. This is the overall point that sums up this illustration for the need for authority. Not everyone who says to me, "Lord, Lord," in other words, not everyone who claims that I am their Lord or I am their master, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. We need to have authority for everything we do and respect God's authority. Okay, that's all for this morning. Thank you.